Hi, welcome to the first ever episode of a new thing I'm trying to do called Feed the Bear. Feed the Bear. The basic premise is I'm a comedian and I spend most of my days reading, listening to podcasts, listening to books, reading articles, just consuming information. Because I'm on airplanes all the time, I'm always flying, and I find some really cool information. And I want to share it. And I don't always want to put everything in joke format, and I think that a lot of people may not have as much time as I do to consume all this stuff. So I just made a bunch of notes, and I'll direct you where to go, and a lot of this is current events, a lot of these things are just really interesting stuff. And it's called Feed the Bear for two reasons. One, I think it's a good metaphor for being somewhat of a data junkie, you know, like a thought junkie. Like, I love thoughts and ideas, and I love when it's stuff I don't know about, you know? And I think a bear is a perfect metaphor because it's this monster, you know, like, feed the bear honey. But at the same time, he's kind of a doofus. He looked really funny in like a bellhop outfit, you know? It's not, bears aren't true monsters, they're just monster-ish. And I've been enjoying this YouTube community so much lately that I just thought that this is the perfect time and place to just start something new. All right, let's start off. First, I saw in the news that Anthony Weiner was charged with texting a minor. And I'm such an idiot that I thought he was sexting with an actual minor, like a man who digs in the ground. I thought that was the real scandal. I honestly did. Like when I first read that, I had to look up whether or not Anthony Weiner was having an affair with a man who digs precious metals or coal out of the ground. Turns out that's not the type of miner. All right. I heard a great podcast called The Art of Charm with Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he had a really interesting concept of the fountain pen. He was talking, this is how this is going to work. All this stuff doesn't link together. It's just interesting tidbits. You don't have to listen to the whole thing. And if any of this stuff sounds interesting, just go for it. All right. You know, I think he's a fascinating human being. But like this tidbit I never thought of, that the difference between a ballpoint pen and a fountain pen, he was talking about how back in the day with a fountain pen, you could see emotion in people's hands. You know, in their writing, you could see like how big the letters were, if they scribbled it out of anger. It was a transference of emotion. And I never thought of that because the written word itself takes a whole element of communication off the table, which is nonverbal and tone. And the typed word takes a whole element of communication away from written communication. Like, imagine reading just beautiful calligraphy. I think one thing that the reader would feel is respected. I think that if someone takes the time to dip a pen and then write it and do all these like really neat movements and then dip and movements, I think that you would take what they said more seriously and you would then give them more respect. I think that's why a lot of correspondents back in the day were a lot less hostile than we see now with people that just type. Another interesting point he brought up was going to the moon with NASA and why we did it. He admitted, this is why I find him fascinating. Like Bill Nye can be questionable at times, but Neil deGrasse Tyson also can occasionally be questionable, which I have no problem with that. Feed the bear, give the bear honey, you know? But he also is one of those scientists that will admit things that aren't necessarily dogmatic. That's another theme of this show I want, is we got no dogma in the fight. You know, I don't want to feel like I have a tribe when it comes to information. I want to feel like if I didn't know something, I'm so glad I found it out. That's the vibe I want. And I think a lot of you listeners and watchers are similar. So anyway, the motivation of the US government to go to the moon and to launch NASA and to do all these space programs was war. It was because Sputnik was launched, and he described it very, I never thought of this, that it was a Russian ballistic missile that was now in space, which there weren't lines drawn yet. Like, there was airspace where people had hashed out where you couldn't fly and whatnot, but space was still wide open. So Sputnik just had a little beep, beep, beep. It was just a satellite, but what it was a demonstration of strength. And that's what really kicked America into gear. And he was talking about how if you go to one of the space places, you see like a bust of Kennedy in one of his quotes, and it's very much about the Cold War. It's about beating Russia, about good and evil, about just getting to space. Because that's when they put "In God We Trust" on the in our Pledge of Allegiance as well as on our money. Because one of the differentiators between America and Russia were they were godless and we had faith. So we were using that as a way to win in this war of ideas. So that was all happening. And I thought that was really fascinating, because I think one thing that we're facing right now is a culture that's kind of weighing on us is we're looking in, which causes great depression and anxiety. I think that when you look out and you get a common goal, it gives people a much higher sense of satisfaction and well-being and purpose versus when you look in. I saw a tweet by a science Twitter handle that I follow, and it said, you know, study shows that Instagram leads to mental health disorders of teens. And I postulated, what if mental health disorders of teens leads to a bad Instagram? Like, what if a lot of these social media things are merely just reflections of our self-perception? And that the fact we don't have a common goal or like a shared vision of the future, like I think that they had more in the 50s and the 60s, I think that caused a lot of problems, because then we overthink ourselves and just things that don't really matter that I'll get to. Oh, and another reason I'm doing this is I want to self-produce an hour special. So I launched another Patreon account, patreon.com/feedthebear. And you can donate stuff, money. If not, don't. But there's different tiers, you know, and you can be a producer on my special, because I shot a whole special. It's a sick special. They paid me. Same producers as a lot of other big specials, and came out amazing. And it never went anywhere, and I think part of it is for political reasons, and I'm not political in the special at all, but I think being very clean and almost being like more family oriented and not really complaining and doing what I don't know, I'm not gonna assign blame, because in the end it's on me. We now have the ability of making our own. So my goal is, if you guys want to see me make a very honest special where I don't have to adhere to the whims of the changing environment, be a member. And different tiers, I'll give you personalized songs, whatever you want. I will piggyback ride you until I break physically. And another thing is, each category of bear has a bear pun, like a Care Bear, like unbelievable, barely human, bearing, you know, you get it. I like puns a lot. All right, so, but don't feel any pressure. Like, just enjoy the stuff. If you just share it or comment or whatever, that helps too. But I really want to make a special, and I promise you, you have my word, I will not profit a penny from this Patreon launch. I just want it to look and sound awesome. And you got to pay people for that. All right, so next up. Oh yeah, the Warshak test. I think that it's kind of like that inkblot test where what's already in your mind and what you already feel determines what you see in that inkblot. And I think that a lot of that is happening with social media as well as all this stuff, because what we already feel, we don't get that fountain pen. You know, we don't get that next level of communication, of tone, of body language, of context. So whatever we're scared of, we manifest in the outside world, and that is causing some problems. It's kind of like that Lena Dunham thing that happened when she got in trouble because she was assuming that this professional athlete was thinking horrible things. When the guy was interviewed, I can't remember who it was, but he was like, what the hell is she talking about? And she like blasted him on social media, and he literally didn't say a single word. You see that a lot in closet homosexuals, where people think that everyone else is gay because of their own feelings. And I see that a lot in paranoia online, and we'll get more to that. But heard some great Freakonomics podcasts. Freakonomics is one of my favorite podcasts because I think economists have a great way of dodging political landmines where you just look at numbers. And, you know, when money is on the line or economies or systems, you can't really BS, you know what I mean? So that's why Freakonomics is awesome. And I listened to a few episodes about gender because I've always been fascinated by gender and how this gender equality movement can actually work and what is possible and what is actually wrong and what could happen. Because I saw the new French president just made a mandate that like his cabinet or whatever French word, cabinet, is equal male and female. And I don't like that because I think it should just be most qualified. Because I think when you make that mandate, you're bigoting yourself to not hiring the best people, but following a preconceived pattern that has nothing to do with excellence. That's how I feel. But there is ways to counteract sexism, which does exist for a variety of bizarre reasons. Another podcast, which I don't remember, I was listening to something that happened with French horn players. Because a lot of orchestras audition people and they just play and people started seeing that it was very male dominated, especially some instruments. So they started doing blind auditions. And that helped in two ways. I don't think a lot of people understand that there's a half of sexism that is self-inflicted by women. And then half, I don't know the percentages, I haven't done any studies, but I'm guessing there are paradigms and males that see things a certain way and females that see it a certain way. But there's also this inhibition thing amongst women where, you know, there's another podcast, I think it was Freakonomics, about the SATs, where the women did better on the SATs when they eliminated the penalty for getting an answer wrong. For whatever reason, and I'm not gonna attribute cause, correlation, nothing, I have no idea, but women are less likely to guess if they don't know. Even if you eliminate two or three, like let's say there's four possibilities and you eliminate two and you don't know. Typically, men will guess. A lot of times women won't guess. And you're only penalized a quarter of a point. So that was hurting women. So when they stopped doing that, women's SAT scores and male SAT scores started evening out. And that's fascinating. And that's also true with like French horns and certain audition situations. Like women didn't want to be in front of, you know, this very male area. So they screened them off and a lot more women got parts because a lot of them were really talented and they were being excluded for a lot of reasons. And I think people assign intent, which isn't good. You can't claim nefarious intention. You just can't. Who knows why that's true? Sometimes it's the simplest little thing and sometimes it's really an evil person. But whatever it is, that's a really good example of gender equalizing in a good positive way, not in this crazy way. Whole three-part podcast. This is by the way, this is all the information I've crunched today. So I want to do a lot of these. There's a three-part podcast on Freakonomics about the problems with medicine, and you'll see a lot of that. A lot of like. You know, too much gender equality resulted in a lot of problems for women because they didn't want to be sexist with trials. And so they would just do male because a lot of drugs would have horrifying birth defects. So to be humane, they would use males over females because they didn't want any drugs to pass the placebo or the placenta barrier or whatnot. But the thing is women metabolize things differently than men, even the same weight. And Ambien created a lot of problems for women. You know, there's a lot of other causation correlation problems in medicine, like the people they would use to study antidepressants, they would never let them be drinkers. That was a way to get rid of factors so that you can really isolate the traits of a new drug. But someone pointed out that most people that are depressed are drinkers. So that's information you're gonna wanna have. And you know, and there's some really nefarious stuff in the history of medicine, and that's one reason why science should not be dogmatically followed, because sometimes the people in charge are really, really evil. Like in the 70s, a group of scientists allowed a bunch of these inner city black guys to not be treated for syphilis to see how bad syphilis got. And that's crazy. And that actually led to a lot of people in the black community not trusting doctors. And people attribute like 1.2 years of premature death to that one factor. That's all economist stuff. Like, I don't really question economists as much as the subjective sciences, you know, or like gender studies or any of these things that literally, I don't even know what that means. But like, that makes sense to me. That I think the banality of evil, where our evil comes with a lot of times ambition and an inability to see the greater cost. And I think to allow people to just become crazy with syphilis it's permanently harmful with trust between a community and science. I was listening to Jocko on Rogan, fascinating guy, this ex-Navy SEAL, has his own podcast, recently wrote a book about for children, about, you know, becoming male or an adult or whatever. I gotta read it. But here's an interesting concept. I don't think they brought up this concept. I don't know if they said this or if I came up with this, but if someone says the power of mind control, do you immediately assume control over others or control over your own brain? And I think it's more important to have control of your own mind, because that is mind control. If you can control your own impulses and stay centered and stay goal-oriented, I think you'll be a lot happier. And you know, him and Rogan both seem like they're very addicted to acquiring new skills, because that keeps your brain from atrophying. You know, your brain, my mom and dad are 75, both very brilliant people. And I think learning is a necessary thing. It's almost like exercise. And they were talking about that. Because I think comedians, soldiers, presidents, a lot of leaders, I think one thing that we all have in common that I don't think a lot of people understand is it's not a selfish job being more on the alpha side. It's more selfless. And I don't know much about being a soldier, because I've never been a soldier, but I've done a lot of reading. And I don't know anything about being a president, because I've never been a president, but I have been a comedian. And selfishness is death. And a lot of times you think of the alpha dog, you know, you think of a president and you assume that it's all about them. When in fact, the best leaders, the best soldiers, the best comedians, the best artists are looking out. Where you have to think, what do people know that I don't know? I don't want to have a weak spot. I also want to put the team ahead of myself. There's a book I read a while ago. I think it's called The Leader Eats Last or something. And I relate a lot to that. That's one of those things that I don't think people know unless they've lived it. That if you've seen I did a documentary, 60 minutes, 7 days, where I wrote an hour of material in 1 week. It's on YouTube. And that's what a lot of people wrote to me about, that they didn't understand how much listening and failure goes into comedy. Where it's not, I'm gonna get a spotlight and say everything I think and everyone's gonna listen and laugh. It's literally like, what do people feel? What do I feel? What is a truth? How can I be aggressive while simultaneously being harmless? You know, this whole dance, it's like music. And great leaders, if you look at all the great quotes that have gone down in history, whether it's a president or a military leader or a cultural leader, it's never about them. It's always about, you know, what can you give? Like you know, what you're willing to give for the group. And I think true masculinity is a combination between goal-oriented, just hard work, and service, and whatever that is. And it doesn't have to be, you know, I got into it with a listener recently who said that he thought I was full of it because I was over-praising working people. And we just started arguing, and it was pretty funny. But I think that, I don't think he understood. I think sometimes when you have too much hubris and you think that you know where someone's coming from and you don't, you can assign blame and not understand what the hell people are talking about. I'm only saying that, I'm not saying there's anything better about, there's anything more manly about chopping wood versus making dolls. And I'm not being sarcastic. I really don't think there's a difference, as long as the man that does either act has a sense of selflessness, is putting the group ahead of them, and a hard work ethic. That's all I'm saying. And I just see more of it in labor job men, typically, because I don't think they have enough free time and resources to really think, like, what kind of wine do I deserve? But you see that, though. There's a lot of really rich, successful men. They're amazing men, you know? But I just was giving props to the working class, and which I'm part of, and this guy got really pissed off, and I think he was kind of doing what we were talking about earlier, is projecting his own insecurities, because I went on his Instagram page, and a lot of it was, he was a construction worker, and a lot of it was taking pictures of really fancy coffees and cured meats and stylish clothing. And it dawned on me that he's not living the life he wants to live. Therefore, he's gonna see threats where there are no threats. That's that. Because there's a lot of glitches in our brain, you know, and we don't know where they're coming from. I heard a great thing. This is just interesting. Zebras, like in a group of zebras, the reason they're striped is because it's a way for them to blend into a herd, not to blend into the savannah. Like, a zebra is not the color of grass. It's the color of other zebras. And they have that, those stripes, because it's tough on the eyes. Like, on camera, you're not supposed to wear stripes because it messes with cameras. It's the same thing with zebras. So if you clip one zebra's ear or just put a ribbon on one zebra, that's the one that'll get eaten because they stand out. And that's, you know, my issue with communism is that I dated a Siberian Jewish girl for a while. Tough as nails, really, really cool person. But, you know, her mom from Siberia lived with us for a little bit, and they have expressions that you can't imagine, that the tallest nail gets hammered down. That's what they say. Basically, if you stand out, you'll be killed. And they would tell me about bread lines and, you know, how there'd be signs warning people not to eat their own children. You know, I don't think Bernie Sanders really brings up that stuff, but it's there. And I'm not making this political, but those are just facts. All right, but I noticed something. This is a glitch. People are fighting over these Confederate statues, and I'm having a really hard time having just normal conversations with quote-unquote progressives, which is a very ironic term because it's the last thing they are at this point, because they don't answer questions and go back and forth. Like, what I'm doing right now is honing thoughts, honing facts, just throwing it out there, letting people just feed the bear, baby, feed the bear. Let stuff bounce off you. Figure out what you really believe. And if there's information that you don't know, you're gonna wanna know that. And dogma's death. Dogma's death to science, dogma's death to comedy, dogma's death. You know, you can have moral codes and ethics and culture that you live by, but when you eliminate ideas because of ego or because you've been brainwashed, that's bad. And there's people that I know that were arguing with me about this. And there is a side to taking down the monuments. And that's the only reason I engaged in this conversation, because I totally see both points. But this is when things start falling apart. And several people were arguing with me about this. And I said, when does it end? And they were like, oh, well, you know, Lee and Davis, they, you know, it's don't give white nationalists pride and you know, slavery was bad. And I'd be like, do you think I don't think slavery's bad? Do you honestly think that this argument is about whether or not I'm pro-slavery? But the question I had, and it got to the point where I just started saying, answer yes or no. Just yes or no. Yes or no, do you think you should take down statues of Julius Caesar? They wouldn't answer. Yes or no, should we take down the Colosseum? Should we take down the pyramids at Giza? Should we take down statues of Napoleon, Thomas Jefferson? You know, and I'm not putting the Confederacy on the level of Thomas Jefferson. That's not my point at all. My point is, when do you draw the moral line? After all of our statues are gone? Because our history is made up of humans and time periods that we can't possibly imagine. The Colosseum was built by slaves, and they would throw Christians to fight lions as entertainment. That is a representation of what the Roman Colosseum is. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it is gorgeous. I'm so glad it's there. It also reminds you of where human nature can go in a time when our brains and our basic biology was identical. So that's in all of us. And I think a lot of right now, these I'm not gonna call them liberals because I still think that there's liberals. I know liberals that haven't lost their mind yet, but these people are crazy, you know, where I'm like, how do you get to assign blame? And of course, everyone compares it to the Holocaust. I'm like, you can't compare it to the Holocaust. And even if you do, there's still an argument for that. I've been to 3 concentration camps. I've been to a church called Kutná Hora in the Czech Republic. I used to live in the Czech Republic. Made out of human bones. 40,000 dead bodies were assembled into like these Gothic, just unbelievable structures. Should we destroy that? No, that happened. All those people died, 14th century, right? I've been to Vlad's castle. I've been to places in Slovakia where you just can't imagine what happened there. You know, I've been to, I have a piece of the Berlin Wall, which is pretty cool. Just, you know, Tower of London. 3 concentration camps, pretty legit. A lot of places where there were great battles, all this stuff. You can't, Julius Caesar was genocidal. Julius Caesar was the first dictator of Rome. Dictator. Do you take down Nero? Do you take down Caligula? No. We have to know what we've been to and where we've come back from. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the South deserves heritage. You know, Dan Carlin had a great idea that you put a symbolic broken chain on the Confederate flag to allow for Southern heritage, but at the same time, you know, show your gratitude for emancipation. Something like that. You know, you just can't take an entire group's heritage because of a mistake that the whole world had. There's more slaves today than in 1850. It's like, and most Southerners didn't own slaves, and most people that died were women and children. You know, you can't take that from people, you know? A lot of people don't even know about what life could be. Like, what things are we participating in right now that in the future are gonna be seen as embarrassing? Do they turn our statues to dust? It's a very slippery slope. And, you know, this conversation with these people is like, they would say stuff like, well, you have white privilege, you can't understand how it feels. You know, that's a black city. I'm like, do you not think black people can handle their own history? Handle the fact that they rose above that and are now in the highest offices in the world. If that was me, if I was black, I can guarantee you that I would look at that with pride and say, hell yeah. Yeah, look at how far we've come. That existed. My ancestors went through that and now I'm right here. I think that you should never wave a Confederate flag at a federal building or a courthouse. Symbolically, that's nuts. But you don't take down statues of people that have debatable lives. You know, you could go through everything. The Great Wall of China, go through that. You know, that was getting dismantled by the communists, by Mao Zedong, who coined the phrase politically correct. They were taking it apart because it reminded them of their inhuman past. You know, that they were above that. Mao Zedong killed 50 million people. And I'm not even judging Mao Zedong. Mao Zedong should have statues. His little red book should be read in school. Because what happens is when you censor this stuff, when you use your PC eraser to take away history, all it does is turn peripheral losers into rock stars, like Richard Spencer is bad. And white supremacy is not an issue in America. Look at the numbers. How many people die from this stuff? Literally none, you know? And you got a guy who literally believes racist thoughts. And that's exceedingly rare with people that just think. It's a real Achilles heel to be racist because you miss out on a lot of skill and you promote a lot of dumbasses. It's not a good way to think. And this guy actually thinks these ways. And banning him That's why I'm making sure I'm explaining myself properly, because he's not a free speech martyr. We should know better and not put it in a situation where a dipshit like that can rise up, okay? We don't want Richard Spencer. Let me tell you a little story about little Owen. When I was 9 years old, I lived in a little town called Oswego, New York. Not a lot of people, a little white kid, you know, my parents are teachers. And I bought a Two Live Crew cassette tape. Why would I do that? Two Live Crew was like a hardcore rap duo. I was a little white kid in Oswego. You know, we usually listen to Motley Crue, where I played the piano. Why did I buy them? Because they were banned. The power of censorship to create a rock star is unbelievable. Their album was called Banned in the USA, and I had to hear it. Same thing happened with the Protestant Reformation. You ban a book, that's all people want. You take down a silly little statue that most people don't even think about, you know? No one's worshiping it. And all of a sudden you have someone with a war cry. And that is a lot scarier. You know? You wanna break down the pyramids of Giza because they were built by slaves? All right, I gotta keep going here. I didn't realize how I always go so long. I'll sum this up. Gavin McGinnis and Thaddeus, I think his name's Russell. Great podcast. Gavin was on Thaddeus's. Gavin is a lot more of a complex human being than I think a lot of people realize. Very intelligent, started Vice, very right wing, very intelligent. I didn't realize his wife is an American Indian who voted for Hillary Clinton. And just hearing him describe those arguments is like, I would watch that sitcom in a heartbeat. You know, and his parents are these Scottish people that think, you know, every penny has to be monitored. And one of the reasons he sounds vulgar to people, you know, he says things intentionally crass, is because that's the culture of Scottish people. And I relate to that culture. Like, I will say words that are disproportionately shocking sometimes just because that's how I was raised. And he brought up a point. He goes, Thaddeus was saying, you know, I don't agree with your views. And he goes, I don't have views. I have a series of facts that I'm always looking to be disproved. He goes, and when you listen to someone like that talk for a long period of time, you really start being like, he's a very intelligent guy. He's really good with Scottish accents too. Real nice guy. That was interesting. That was interesting to see the layers of that, to see like, you know, and I've heard people call him a white supremacist. He was like, my kids look like Asians. He's just like a dude. He started Vice magazine. I didn't know that. Fascinating dude. Yeah, tech CEOs don't let their kids use iPads and iPhones. I find that fascinating. A lot of them have their kids play with like wooden blocks and rope and stuff. Genghis Khan, if you listen to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, once he felt his people were getting soft, once they started becoming rich and conquering China, he forced them to live back in the Mongolian steppe so they didn't lose their skills and their culture. That's something we can all relate to right now. I think we're drowning in our own wealth as a culture. Listen to a great episode on suicide. Chris Cornell, big fan of his music. I really want to understand suicide more, so Freakonomics. Crazy stat is poor people don't really kill themselves very often. And Amazonian tribes don't even have a word for it. A lot of times the highest rate of suicide is amongst white males in America. It's fascinating. It's the bleakness of success and a lack of purpose is dangerous. And you're twice as likely to die from suicide than murder. You know? And it's sad. I mean, it's really sad, and like what causes it. And I think that we need struggle in our life. We need to actively seek out skills. Like what you're doing right now by watching this, and what I'm doing right now by scribbling this down from a pad I got at a truck stop. This is us not killing ourselves. You know, I think depression is to be fought, but you don't fight depression, you reach for something else. And I've battled depression intensely in my life. And I, you know, this is my solution. This family, you know, pride, I need these things. And there's actually science to it. I found that cool. Oh, here's something that I learned that I was wrong about. Another thing about Feed the Bear is I want to brag about being wrong. I want our culture to be happy to learn something new and to be like, I can't believe I thought that. I'm partially right, but I did a tweet about how it's ironic that rednecks live green lives and a lot of these celebrities live lives of horrible abundance and city folk, you know, because a lot of my friends are rednecks. I live in the mountains of New York State, and some of them have solar, a lot of them have solar panels. That we have 10 chickens, a lot of my friends have 10 chickens. We get our food that's raised 5 miles away, almost all of it. We don't go on a lot of trips. I travel for work, but in general, rednecks don't really leave a big footprint on this world. You know, they walk a lot, they work with their hands. And I shouldn't have been so condemning because of someone sent to me some articles that changed my mind on this, that Manhattan, San Francisco, Tokyo, London, a lot of these cities are actually very green because high rises can function as like honeycombs, like bees. You can turn off your heat in the winter sometimes because the heat just rises and warms all these people. And also, you know, a lot of foot traffic, a lot of people walk to work, you have mass transit. A lot greener than I thought. I think I was thinking Los Angeles because that's where I lived, and I think of these massive homes. But you could also point out that they don't have a winter to heat the house, but a lot of excess, a lot of waste, Whole Foods, a lot of, you know, you got to fly in all this food. You know, when you eat locally, it is better. But it changed my mind where I don't have a stance anymore on that. I really believe that rednecks were way greener, but it turns out very debatable. Manhattan, I guess, is very green. I mean, there's like 20 million people living in this little area, and it hasn't gone to hell yet. All right, I think that's gonna do it. I'm in Texas right now, about to go on stage, but you can go to hugepianist.com to see where I'm gonna be next. My other podcast, Why Didn't They Laugh, and Case Closed Beers Open that I do with my brother, and you can support this one, because there's a Why Didn't They Laugh Patreon that just goes for technical stuff, like it's patreon.com/WDTL, and this one is patreon.com/feedthebear. Because there's no money in free thought, guys. I'm just going to be honest with you. And everyone's seeing it. A lot of my favorite podcasts, they're all about Patreon now because, you know, there's no money. And the only money is in saying that everyone's a victim and silence. And I can't live that way. You know, it's just not, I'm good at my job because I'm very curious. I'm like Curious George, except I'm not a monkey. I'm a boy. So check that out. You can always email me if you have any comments on anything. You know, like I did a video a week ago and I got someone's name wrong. I said Douglas Murray instead of Charles Murray. And someone corrected me very nicely and it was awesome. So I love that. WhyDidn'tTheyLaugh@gmail.com. Email me. Yeah. And thank you. Share this. Much love. Thank you. Cheers. Keep thinking. Feed that bear. Feed your bear, man. Feed that bear. Feed that bear a little taste of honey. A little honey makes everything better. Yeah.